This is Rafflebix After Hours.
Welcome, everybody. Episode 30. We made it a nice round number. This is Rack Addict After Hours, and we are still after hours. It's our weekly update. That's how we always start. The ModCaf has been doing a few livey, streamy boys, and we had Circles in Circles on the other day. That was piano from one location via the internet all the way to somewhere else to be processed by a modular and then live streamed. It was pretty cool and nice and ambient and a relaxing evening. And then I remembered in 4 days' time I have to do my own live set, and time has passed and I have 2 days of free time to write a live set.
Uh-oh.
So I've got the Digitact and I've the subharmonicons out of the modular case. I've just got those two trying to focus in. But yeah, I've got to make something.
How long do you have to play for?
Everyone else has kind of done half an hour.
Okay.
Which we'll see. I've reached out to some of my more EDM producery friends. Like, hey, I need some samples. All I've got is the stock Digitact ones. So hopefully I have some nice punchy drums. Because I want to get some kind of housey thing out of the subharmonicon, because I think it can do that.
You can,
but We shall see.
I've got the 1,000 sample pack for the Digitech.
Mm-hmm.
With all the SysX files to install it.
Tempting. We shall have words after we're finished,
yes.
I think. I might need it because I need ideas. But yeah, that's about it. I did actually just have a go using it as a monosynth, just from the key step through a bit of reverb, and it works quite well. Works quite well like that, if you have more chops than me. Anyway, Pete, what have you been up to? Because I know Telmo's going to fill us in on the house moving process in a bit, but what have you been doing up
in Tara? I actually got My various bits and thonks. So I hadn't realised that thonks lead time now is 2 weeks.
Well, it placed an order 2 weeks later, it turns up.
Yes.
Ah.
So I hadn't read the small print. I was thinking, that order went in, didn't it? Well, two orders went in. So various things that I spoke about the other week when I'd bought the nuts, the colourful nuts.
Oh, yeah, of course, banana nuts.
I've lost it somewhere, but I bought loads of flat cables. Various different sizes, and I'm gonna have to modify. Well, not modify them. I'm gonna have to get the little, the standoffs with the pins that you put on the boards, like the pins go through.
You get this in strips.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna have to get some of those, but the sized ones, and you can get them where the pins are the same size on each side of the strip.
Oh yeah.
And then use that as an adapter, so it's for
for your troubleshooting and following traces.
But I also went and got one of these Japanese solder suckers.
Ooh, I've been tempted for so long.
Look at that.
So I mean, they seem to extol how wonderful these things are. I mean, I'm not particularly unhappy with the solder sucker I've got, but this one's very kind of it's tiny, isn't it, compared to some of the ones I've got are beasts.
I need the excuse because I'm still running the Maplin special, may they rest in peace.
Well, I had to, it's, you know, the old adage when you've got to try and get the purchase over a certain level to get the free delivery.
Oh, yeah.
Or it kind of works out because you saved on the delivery, so it eats into the extra thing that you bought to save on the delivery, if that makes any sense.
Did Maplin actually win on administration?
Yeah, quite a while ago now, actually.
Yeah.
I think there's some element of Maplin still functioning on the mail order side of things. I don't know if it was, one of the dragons from Dragon's Den or something like that. These sort of people that tend to step in and sort of buy the residue of something like that. I think the main thing is they got rid of all the numerous and expensive retail outlets, which was one of the biggest burdens they had.
Well, their website is still active.
Yes.
So, I don't know, maybe they're just functioning as an online platform.
They're either just an e-tailer or they're just trying to get rid of the residual stock. Well, that's been going for some time now, so I think they're most probably restocking. So it'll be a much more focused and economical business model than having these. Because those shops that they had were quite large. Yep. It was sort of the equivalent of in the US Radio Shack, wasn't it?
Yeah, I went into a Radio Shack once when I was in America. It was pretty cool, actually. I'd love to have one of those knocking about.
But there's very few. I mean, there always used to be little electronic shops. There was one in Guildford at one stage, and certainly there were others around. You really don't see that type of place anymore. I mean, you are either left with eBay or maybe
or the big retailers, maybe like B&Q or something like that. But it's not as specific, you know.
Well,
you
not not electronics. They'll have
not
electrical.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
but when you want to get into the electronics, you're either left with the sort of Farnells or RS Supplies, or if you're using
Mausers.
Some of the US ones, it'll be DigiKey and
Mauser,
yeah, that's the one. It always throws me. But other than that, I can't think of any sort of actual retail outlets that you can approach and go in and purchase any sort of any decent or any type of electronics, to be really honest.
Rare breed now.
Yes.
Friends, the internet is taking over everything.
I mean, it must be great at those sort of multi-story markets they have in China, where you can go in sort of in those sort of business centers where you can sort of go.
Literally,
and they have
one aisle and you can buy everything for your synth.
Well, they literally have everything, don't they? Somewhere in there, they have everything.
Yeah,
that's where the dude who made the sequencer that inspired the IntelliGel Metropolis got all those big old multi-position switches from is at one of those big old electronics places and just saw these weird switches and went, aha, an idea.
Yes. I got paranoid. I was harassing. I pre-ordered one before they came in to the UK, and then after a sort of waiting a couple of months, I was got sort of paranoid because I kept reading these reports suggesting that there was going to be they only had so many components, so they were only going to build so many of them, which was a bit paranoid and wasn't actually the case. But so basically, going where's my Metropolis? When am I going to get it? And I got sort of a kind of terse sort of thing. Yeah, you kind of get it when we made them.
Yeah. I know.
Telmo, how's moving?
Oh, it's been dreadful, horrible. It's been quite a week for me. So I moved on Wednesday. I managed to get the company's large van in the evening to get some of the bigger stuff. Thank you to also some of my mates, Owen and Renzo, for helping me out with some of that stuff. It was massively hard to get stuff out of the apartment, go down the stairs, getting beds and wardrobes and stuff like that. And then, obviously, you know, 2 days of 35 degrees on Thursday and 32 on Wednesday or something like that, which is, this is, of course, 32, like, European... how do you say it? Is it Fahrenheit? And how do you say it in...
No, degrees will be centigrade and Fahrenheit will be
centigrade,
the...
Centigrade, that's it. 32 degrees centigrade. So it's been, it's been crazy. But now hopefully I can move around, which as you can see, I can.
He's waving his arms, listeners, we promise.
In my new living room. And it's a really cool flat. I've got a balcony, which I'm really happy
jealous.
With. It's a really nice area, Walton on Thames, which is really close to London. So once the things go back to normal, I can...
Telmo's gone to where it's all happening.
Yeah, it's where things happen. So I got to be in it. After moving everything, I've decided to set up my desk, which was done today. I've got a carpenter to do specifically this desk, which I'm sitting by right now. And I'm really happy with it because I get my Genelec AT30s literally in the perfect angle facing my lovely set of ears.
Wait, so you've got like a custom-made desk with you now?
Exactly. Yeah.
Cool.
Yep. So it's a four kind of sheet plywood, and it's quite strong as well, and it's really nice. You know, I'd rather pay someone to actually do something that I want. I mean, it turns out to be okay. It was delivered today, and it's sturdy, so that's good. Now, what I was looking into this afternoon is acoustic panels.
Damn, yes.
So this is something that I really need to think about sorting out. And I don't know if you guys have any recommendations. I was looking into GIK Acoustics Europe. They have a couple of products I'm really interested on. The first one being the PIB, which is a portable isolation booth.
They're really cool for apartments and stuff. Maybe I should have one so we can stop hearing the traffic coming through my microphone and messing everything up.
They're really great. I mean, they look awesome. I don't know, Pete, if you ever come across one of these. I mean, I know you guys obviously don't record a lot of acoustic stuff, but I do. I record acoustic guitars, vocals, sometimes the old cheeky percussion and stuff. So I do need something that folds around, that's easy to move. And this one seems to do the job.
So is it like a portable screen type thing that you can actually move around, or is that how it functions, or is it like a reflection filter type thing?
So it's literally a piece of... it's kind of like it's inched in the middle, and it's a portable isolation booth. So imagine it opens up in two.
Yes.
And then it opens up in four. So it opens up as well, upwards. So you can use to record, if you keep it fully open, you can use it to record vocals, but then you can close the lid on top and it will be perfect to record acoustic instruments, like an acoustic guitar if you're sitting down. That's what it does. It's just a really nice panel.
What's it fabricated? What's the construction?
Hang on, let me just go into GIQ's acoustics website.
I think thinking of the wrong kind of thing. I was imagining a full-on collapsible, like full enclosure vocal booth thing.
Yeah.
Is it that kind of vibe?
It's that kind of thing. It's unfolded and then it collapses. Well, it's. I'll send you the link.
Found it. Portable isolation booth.
There we go.
Oh yeah. Okay, I see that. Just a really big reflection filter, basically.
Yeah, it's made of beech wood veneer, and obviously you've got the foam on one of the sides if you fold it on, both sides if you fold it, and one of the sides if you're just standing up.
So you could use the, because obviously it's foam backed if you have the wood facing you, so that would kind of solve the problem of just having an ultra dry, miserable sound if you're doing like acoustic guitar or something.
Exactly.
Pretty cool.
So, I found this afternoon. I was like, delighted, I need to buy this stuff. Some more maybe acoustic panels to go. Some wife-friendly acoustic panels, or girlfriend-friendly, if you
well,
like.
Well, yeah,
it.
You could just make if you're handy enough, it's not even that difficult. You can make them yourself and then cover them in whatever fabric works for your room. Just get some rock wool in there.
Yeah, I might do that myself, to be fair, man.
Yeah, all you need is something to slice up some 2x4-y type things and like a staple gun and some screws and a drill. Done.
There we go. DIY Ben.
As long as you can, like, screw into the walls. Obviously, apartment living is always a bit annoying with that kind of stuff.
But yeah, I've done well with
command strips, but they wouldn't work for anything wooden. They're too weedy.
Some of them can last up to 4 kilos in terms of weight, so that shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah, well, my incredibly low budget cloud, in inverted commas, that's kind of above my head is command stripped there, and it hasn't hit me yet. So, they're doing all right.
We're all praying for you, Ben.
I just hope the heat doesn't melt them or something.
And that's been pretty much it for me. I've been also looking at some plugins from Good Hertz. I don't know if you guys ever heard of Good Hertz.
Heard of them, never used.
I've used the Wolf compressor. The Wolf compressor,
Oh, it's those peeps.
Yeah.
They're cool.
It's expensive, if you ask me, but it's also really good. So they go for $149, but they are, I think, the nicest compressor, especially for bass and drums. They just sound absolutely brilliant.
Squishy and slightly lo-fi is the general vibe of that one, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. It's the ultimate compressor, as they call it. It's really boutique, top shelf Himalayan pink sea salt.
Pink sea salt in plug-in form.
So I might get this one, to be fair. I mean, I've got all the UAD stuff, but they're plugins. But anyway,
Plug-in time.
That's been my week and my day.
Nice one. Well, at last we have a new synthesizer. Dreadbox, we all like a little bit of Dreadbox. I personally really like the Nyx and the Abyss, which no longer exist, sadly. But the Dreadbox Typhon. So their tagline for this, which I'm going to challenge you two to get me to rethink my opinion on. So they say, not just another monophonic synthesizer. I think it. I mean, it's just a monosynth that you can power the battery pack.
Yeah, but that's not Fight the tagline, Ben. I gotta tell you, man, it looks awesome, and the fact that you can obviously incorporate the DSP effects. I think there are 12 different effects with the analog. Part of it, obviously, you've got two classic Dreadbox oscillators and a few VCAs as well. You know, it's nice. It looks nice and it looks quite portable, but I haven't properly spent some time hearing all the functionalities of it. So, I don't. What do you think, Pete?
Be interesting to see how the preset side of things works. It's not something I associate with Dreadbox. They tend to be much more instruments for being in the moment, and the fact that it's got something, it's got 256 presets, it's kind of encouraging, and it means that you can you can save your noodling. And it does, as I said to you guys earlier, it does present itself as being a possibility of quite a useful performance instrument, possibly in coordination with some other bits and pieces. So I'm slightly more intrigued than I was initially. It's a bit I can be a bit ambivalent about a lot of these things that come out. You just go, oh, it's another thing. But I had a good listen. There's numerous YouTube videos, notably two from Dreadbox themselves that I've seen. And they, they're very heavily affected. So, it's a collaboration. What are they called? Sign Vibes.
Developed
the effects, and there's certainly on the patches that I heard, the effects side of things was very notable.
Sign Vibes developed some of the effects as well for Korg. So most of the DSP effects that you hear on the
multi-engine stuff.
Yeah. What's the name of it? Oh, the monologue and the mini log and stuff.
Yeah, and the prologue, I think, would be the first prologue one they would have
that's
done.
That's right, yep.
And also that other little new tech thing that I keep forgetting.
Yeah, that's just a multi-engine with a ribbon controller on it, which is actually, we have one in. Did you see the one that was in work?
No, I've not seen it.
It's knocking about somewhere, but give it a go. It's pretty cool.
Is it floating around?
Yeah, I don't know where I left it. We all had a good noodle, and the effects do sound great on that.
I'll have a see if it's still floating around or it's floated off somewhere.
Yeah, but no, this would do a similar kind of thing because you got that audio input on it. One thing that I had just thought is, I mentioned the Abyss was one of my favourites, which didn't last very long. It was their four voice poly. Yeah. I don't know how long the production run was, but I've played one once and it was really nice. Four voices. But if they're starting to get presets on here, maybe they're slowly implementing things in a way that they want, just testing the waters. How would we do a menu system and preset management and things? Yeah, maybe they're going to revisit a little poly. That would be exciting.
Yeah,
ooh,
possibly.
That would be nice. That would be really nice.
But I'm always slightly nervous when a sort of predominantly analog manufacturer starts dabbling too much with digital.
Dabbling in digital.
Well, the collaboration with the Polyend people.
It went okay.
After a fashion, after they got the...
When the firmware worked, yes. The Medusa was okay. Yeah.
But, I mean, it's not something that flew off the shelves, put it that way.
No, not at all. Yeah, I think it's still think it's really cool. But yeah, I think if they'd wait a little bit to get that firmware right before they actually released it, it would have been really, really quite a hit. Especially if a little bit later, the whole MPE thing and with more like the thing. The Hydra synth. Lots more poly after touchy type stuff floating around. It might have been a little bit ahead of its time, maybe.
Yeah. I think potentially with the price point, this Typhon is coming. Typhon.
Typhon, yeah. Typhon, more Greek mythology
Typhoon.
Stuff.
Yes.
Can I just read you this little... So at the end of the Dreadbox website, it says there's like this little saying, "Now after Zeus had driven the Titans out of heaven, gigantic Gaia in love with Tartaros, by means of golden Aphrodite, bore the youngest of her children, Typhon."
That is not overly dramatic at all, and I love it. Actually, I quite like the vibe that they're doing with this and Hypnosis. You know, that effects box that's all pink and light blue neon 80s stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I do like the sort of graphic look that they're going for with some of their newer stuff.
Absolutely.
I can see myself investing, potentially. I'm sort of warming to it.
Yeah, it's growing on me as well.
And then I'm curious about the obviously it's some sort of, I don't know if it's a rechargeable, it's just standard batteries, but it's portable as well.
Yeah, I don't think it has batteries. You'd have to bring a bank with you.
Mm-hmm.
So they just sort of got, someone's got a power bank in their pocket and USB attaching it.
Yeah, like you could do with the Micro Freak, the Arturia.
Yes.
So it's got 60 playing hours. So obviously, you know, this is depends which sort of power bank you use as well.
Yeah, I think they
they
sort of said 60 hours on whatever size bank. I'll dig into some demos, see if it can. I don't want to be tempted.
I'm slightly even more tempted now. I'm looking at the specs, and it's definitely 5-pin DIN MIDI in and out, which I was a bit nervous and thinking they only had the USB, but
or the 3.5 mils or something annoying.
Yeah,
no, that's getting me excited to get some sort of a converter to plug in my guitar into the Typhon, and to get these really crazy mono synth sounds out of the guitar, and to be able to use it as a solo tool.
Yeah, I'd love it if things like something similar to the Moog Taurus came back. So, you know, solo guitar player can add some absolutely crushing bass with foot pedals, or of course, guitar MIDI or something, which is pretty cool.
Well, I can see myself possibly sort of replacing one of my Pioneer AS1s.
Oh yeah,
with this maybe to change it up a bit. Yeah, to change it up a bit.
That's a good idea.
I mean, I'm sort of in the mood to reconfigure my my pedal board anyway.
What, reconfigure it before it had an outing?
Yes. Well, the trouble is the chances of it having an outing in this year, it's negligible. In fact, it's not going to happen, is it? Unless I have an outing on my own.
Oh, yeah.
Private outing. So.
Think about selling some of my PA stuff specifically because of that, because I don't know if it's worth keeping it. But we'll see.
Well, I've just acquired, or will be acquiring, yet another S1 Pro.
Is that the third one?
No, that's the second one.
Oh, right. I thought you had the second.
No. I've got the first one. I've got the second one. So I will have a pair shortly at some point.
Do you want to borrow mine for a while if you need it?
I have no particular burning need because there's nothing happening. I mean, there was a few things. There was several things I was going to get engaged with. Ben had asked me to do there was the lighting thing for the modular CAF that was happening. Was that around July?
I need to see. I think it's been postponed. So this was it's a show with Void Null, who are a local live AV thing, and their themes are always crushing death and like universe-ending type stuff. You know,
yeah, they're into those mawkish kind of
So this one is at a disused wind tunnel, a town not too far away.
Sounds like a great venue.
Yeah, well, it's going to be It is just a really long kind of cuboid room, and they did some tests. They took some smoke machines and a few lighting bits and lasers and what have you. And you know that scene from Alien when they go down to, there's the thing with all the eggs and there's that mist over the top.
Yeah.
And then they had loads of that kind of stuff. So it was like everyone was wading through this waist high misty soup and then crushing evil synthesizer stuff and then projections going,
"In a million years, the world will be destroyed."
You know, that kind of stuff.
And yeah.
Not in a million years.
Yeah, well, put it this way. Their old show is called The Future is Death.
Lovely.
And it's all about the heat death of the sun and all this kind of guff.
Yeah. I just don't see that being rescheduled this year. I just don't see how that's potentially feasible.
Yeah, we'll see what happens to it. It's such a cool idea. I hope it. We just get a firm date at some point.
We've just got to look forward to hopefully things become more plausible next year.
That, yeah, you know, I'll be doing something with Ben from the ModCaf, so it'll be Ben squared. And we haven't, obviously it's not happening, we haven't really worked on anything, but I just said, I think it should be called Colossus, and we should summon as many oscillators as we possibly can to drone people to death. So now we have a subharmonicon on side, Instro CSL, which is a monstrous oscillator, and he's just bought a Soma Lyra 8. So I think we can rearrange some organs quite nicely with that.
Okay, so I think I know where I want when I want to die. It's
yeah,
going to be
at that gig. That's a way to go.
When was it actually scheduled for before it got sort of postponed or whatever?
I think it was July sometime, and yeah, it's not going to happen.
No, and it does. Yeah, it sounds great. Well, I'll look forward to hopefully it happening in 2021.
Yeah, should be good. Right, unless anybody else has something to interject, it's time to share some entertaining things from the land of YouTube, but not necessarily YouTube, if you don't want. I have been jumping into a lot of my old favourite musical comedians. Tim Minchin and Bo Burnham are some of the higher flying ones that I know of, but these two that I shall recommend a few songs from are a little bit more underground, but massively funny. So, the first one is a gentleman called Jay Foreman.
Ooh.
You know, do you know Jay Foreman?
I have heard of him. Tell
Ooh,
me more
yes.
about it.
So he's a Londoner. On his YouTube channel, he's got a lot of videos just about London. They're really interesting and entertainingly presented. Mm. But he's got a few tunes that I really like. A lot of them are... I think he does a lot of children's entertainment, or has done. So a lot of them are really kind of innocent humour. But when there's a lot of people just doing kind of crude stuff and just swearing a bunch, it's nice to have really innocent stuff that's still really funny. He's got one called Trousers, which I definitely recommend. But the two I think you should check out today, or is it three? It's three. One is called Where Do You Get Your Food From, Grandma? Which is always good. The Day I Met Sooty, as in the Sooty and Sweep, the little bear. And my personal favourite, the pretty absurd Skin Sofa, which unusually for musical comedy is in 5/8, because why not?
Because why not, yeah.
Yeah, definitely recommend giving him a listen. Always makes me smile, even if I'm in a miserable mood. So that's what you want out of your musical comedians. The next guy, actually both of these people have been on YouTube for a million years. So we've got Jay Foreman, and this guy is called Brett Domino, who found a little bit of one of those sort of viral moments when he made a video which was how to make an Ed Sheeran hit. So he takes Ed Sheeran-like features, you know, acoustic guitar, four chords, certain three notes that he likes, and he made a giant word cloud of all the lyrics. And he just manufactures his own Ed Sheeran song. Brilliant. Lunchtime Lover. Bin Guy. And finally, I Think I'm in Love with the Girl Who Works on Checkout 6 in Decathlon.
Oh, my God.
10 out of 10 would recommend. Really, really funny.
That sounds amazing.
He has that kind of humor where he's really close up to the camera and he's kind of looking really uncomfortable. And he says, that's the video I'm going to show now. That type of thing. And it's really awkward and brilliant. Brett Domino, Jay Foreman. Give it a go. It's a laugh.
Sweet.
Who's next? Silence. Nobody. Telmo.
I'll do it. So I wasn't thinking about actually referring any musician / comedian, but you remind me of someone that's very fond to me. It's Stephen Lynch.
Rings a bell.
Yeah, he's he's a musician that's got these crazy lyrics. He has a song. There's a specific song that you can search on YouTube. It's just like very old stuff, but the song is called Craig.
Yeah, I've seen a couple. He's so good.
Right. So Craig, and I'm gonna read you partially the part of the third verse of this song, and it goes like this. I don't turn water into wine, but into cold cruise light. I'm not my brother, I know. I don't walk on H2O, but I got some hydroponic shit that me and Judas grow.
You can put that one over there, Pete.
And his name is Craig Christ. So, yeah. So, yeah, this is very fun, very good stuff. And yes, please do that. Please put it on top of my... oh, hang on. There's another one.
You're just making more work for poor Pete now. Wait, no, I'll give you another one quickly.
I never use them.
Damn it. I think it's funny.
I know. I just chop out the beer if it's
yeah,
bad.
My actual recommendation now is a video from MK Ice and Fire. And this is quite a lot. It's a gaming channel. So you can find like loads of walkthrough of like some of the most modern games from Deadpool to Spider-Man. This one is the whole 20 hours of gameplay of The Last of Us 2. Which is pretty much a game that I'm really looking forward to play at some point in my life. I've been getting loads of my mates have just been shouting at me about it. He's like,
you
have to
one?
Do it. I didn't. No, that's the thing. I'm really excited because the second one apparently is amazing too.
Well, you've just got to play the first one first.
yeah, I know. Have you guys played any of the
Last of Us? I think I got about a quarter of the way into the first one, but I've never owned a console until the Switch. So cool. I've never been able to finish it, but it was really cool. Lovely, lovely storytelling. I say lovely. It's grim and harrowing, but it's a great story.
Exactly. Well, this one, apparently, it's that's when... Anyway, The Last of Us 2, there's a video. It's a gameplay walkthrough of the entire game. It's very entertaining to watch. You can also get an idea of the actual story. And yeah, I really appreciate going through it on like a rainy day. If you don't have much to do, just go and have a little look at this video. Basically, that's it, Pete.
Right. Well, I've dived back into my copious subscription list, and this particular channel, it sort of harkens back to, I think you mentioned the sort of, was it Living Big in Tiny Houses or?
Yep, that's right.
Channel like that.
I
was thinking of mentioning
ago.
This one then, but I thought it was appropriate to have it on its own. It's one that I followed for a number of years. It's named after the lady that does the the interviewing, if you want to call it that. Her name is Kirsten Dirksen, and it seems as though that she travels around USA and Europe extensively with her husband or partner and their three children. And they basically feature people sort of alternative living, but they're featuring on the properties that they've developed. So it could be people using containers to convert into some sort of housing, or they might, I mean, a lot of the housing is very unconventional, or it's something particularly old that's been repurposed or renovated. It was quite an interesting one a few months ago, and it was about these ghost villages in Portugal where you can go and buy the properties there really inexpensively, but they do need a lot of extensive work.
Yep.
And there were some people that had converted them into these sort of holiday type of apartments, and they'd done sort of amazing things with the sort of minimal amounts of space. There's another one where not sure if it was France, but it was basically a windmill with a cave underneath, and they converted the cave into a house.
Great.
So it's all really, I mean, they're all really interesting. And she'll ask a few questions, but she just mainly allows the person that's developed the property, and invariably they've done it themselves with their own hands rather than just sort of commissioned sort of architects and so forth. And it just allows them to tell their own story. And there's some wonderful ones where it's the pace. I mean, obviously, when people produce videos, there's a certain style to it, but there's quite a relaxing pace to her production technique. I mean, there was a great one. Again, I think this was possibly on the coast of Spain, if I'm not incorrect. And it was these sort of like towers. Either Spain or Greece, somewhere like that. It's in the Mediterranean. And these sort of ancient towers that they used to sort of retreat and pull all their animals into. And they're sort of all along the sort of this rocky sort of abandoned shoreline.
Yeah.
And again, and most of them, what it is that a lot of them, because they are available for as holiday lets, and I don't know if you're using one of these sort of websites that specialise in this, or I would imagine that, you know, I don't know how she'd find out. Maybe they're seeing her videos and sort of suggesting that she comes, but that she goes and stays at all these places. So they're all available to sort of rent partially, or there's... or there'll be separate buildings that are associated with it are available. But, yeah, it's just people living in a sort of very nice, eco-friendly, you know, without going over the top type of... the sort of possibly the sort of existence that a lot of us dream about having, you know, sort of getting away from all the horrendous stresses and strains of life and all the bustle and hustle and so forth. And but they're all in wonderful places. So there's another one. There's quite a few of these ghost villages, because I think it's quite an issue in places like Spain and Portugal, isn't it? Where the
especially. I mean, I can give you the example from Portugal, as in most of the population is obviously living by the coast. So it's only 10 million people living in Portugal. But if you think about that, there's a whole part of interior, a whole inside of the country that's pretty much dead, and it's beautiful places where there used to be, you know, like miners working, and loads of like particular jobs, and obviously there's a lot more services type of jobs happening than, you know, crafting jobs, so people are really moving to the seaside for that, and to the big cities for that too. So but it's lovely places. Those ghost villages are really something else, and you can get houses so cheaply. It's crazy. Maybe like 50 grand you can buy an amazing house.
Well, these ones were cheap. They were sort of saying, she was asking how much a property like this was, and it wasn't you know, it was not massive, but they were 20,000 euros.
Yeah, I bet you can get something. Like
and
that
then,
too, yeah.
But you would have to spend another 50,000 euros on top to get it to sort of a modern livable standard. But again, it's still a relatively cheap house. Well, certainly in terms of property in this country. But you know, I've got no way of scaling or comparing that in sort of in the locales where these properties are. But there's some more, much more ambitious type of houses. She's done earthships. Are you guys familiar with the earthship type of philosophy? The sort of house
that's
just
imagining somebody who's like crashed a boat offshore, and they're like, okay, that's cool. I shall
live
in
a house out of
it. Exactly.
Well, invariably, earthships, I mean, in a lot of cases, they're built out of used tires, and then they've packed them with dirt, and then they sort of use a kind of basic kind of rough plastering over the top. And they're configured with a slanted sort of greenhouse type effect at the on the southern side, or the side that's going to catch the most sun. And the idea of the property is that it's a minimal impact, so it barely needs any heating, if at all.
Yeah.
You catch all your rainwater. It's sort of the archetypal eco house. They have them. There's a lot of them, or a reasonable amount, in the New Mexico desert, but you can have them in any climate. It doesn't have to be in a sort of southern desert sort of climate. I mean, I believe she featured one that was actually up in Canada, so it was closer to the Arctic
Circle.
Yeah, they
look pretty cool.
Yeah, so there's a whole variety. But I mean, other times she'll be featuring sort of like maybe a hydroponic farm in the middle of a city, something like that. But yeah, invariably, all these properties are all completely different, all very unusual, and all very inspiring. So I think it's generally
worth a
watch.
Can you give us the name of the channel again?
Yes, it's Kirsten Dirksen.
Yeah, definitely a good companion to living big in a tiny house. They're always really relaxing to watch. I really like these.
Yeah.
Well, if you tuned in to, what was it? Actually, last episode, I think we had a writer's block chat that went into a bit of music theory stuff. Telmo, I have made an progress. I had a chat with Sam, who was one of our colleagues, used to work with us. He's an what would you say? He's a guitarist and a drummer, and he likes his brutal, crushing, evil metal. And
he makes some
incredible, pretty, ambient piano things, which is a hilarious kind of dichotomy there. But his technique was to just find out what C minor is and mash it. And it's worked amazingly. So now I know what C and G minor look like, and I can sort of blag some stuff. And it's great. Yeah.
Cool. That's amazing, man. That's really good. You see, that's the whole thing about getting out of this rut that sometimes people are on. I think just find some anchors. Find your C minor, find your G minor. Eventually, you're going to be working on your E flat major, and you're going to be starting to, oh, okay, so there's my B flat, there's my F minor, and then you start to understand.
So is that
the whole
E flat major? Did you say, is that my next stop?
Yeah, I think you want to.
I'll save that for later, but I'll go in that direction next.
Yeah, that's basically the minor scale from 1 to 8. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. If you play all the chords, you get all of these different voicings. Minor diminished as well. But anyway,
you're going a bit too fast for me there, Telmo.
Oh, you start giving me the old theory slang, and I love
it. He just goes. What a nerd. Well, thank you very much for listening, everybody. That was the 30th episode. How many months is maths?
4, 5, 7 numbers.
I don't know. We do this thing weekly anyway, did you know? Best place to actually have a chat with us, if you like, would be to go on the Rack Addicts Facebook page, leave a comment there. Soon to be coming to a YouTube near you, and hopefully we'll see you in those comment sections. Thank you very much for listening, and hopefully you'll catch us next week.